Tuesday, May 23rd, and you're listening to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. I am not Bill Buckmaster. I am Mark B. Evans, administrator of TucsonCitizen.com. I'm sitting in for the Double B today while Bill enjoys the cool breezes of the Pacific Ocean during his much-deserved vacation. We have a great show lined up for you today. We're pulling back the curtain a little on how local journalists decide what the news is and the role opinion plays in those decisions. For the top half of the show, my guest is the aptly named Tim Steller, the freshly minted Metro columnist at the Arizona Daily Star. And in the bottom half of the hour, I'll have the two Dans in studio, Dan Gibson, editor of the Tucson Weekly, and Dan Shearer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sun, the two largest non-daily newspapers in town. I'll be talking to them about the mission and audience of their news organizations and how that informs their news decisions. But let's get started with the show. Welcome, Mr. Steller. Thanks for being here today.
Thank you, Mr. Evans.
So I noticed when you started as the new Metro columnist in January, you didn't write the usually ubiquitous intro column. Was that by design or by accident?
That was by design. My bosses wanted, and I agreed, that for me to just come out swinging, so to speak. Not to say that I wanted to present some wild-eyed viewpoint, but just to have something hard-hitting to say, something newsy, other than talking about myself.
So let's take the opportunity to find out who you are, in case people don't know you, other than your name and your picture that runs on the front page of the paper. So how did you come to be a journalist, come to be in Tucson?
Mm-hmm. Well, let me see. Journalism attracted me because of writing. I've always liked writing.
That's too bad.
Yeah, I know it is. And so, you know, high school, college papers. I never got a degree in journalism, hardly took a class in journalism. But when it came time, I got a master's degree in geography at the University of Wisconsin, of all things. And when it came time at the end of that, I'd already had a newspaper internship and experience at college papers and such. And when it came time after my master's degree to decide what to do, I just decided to move back to Minneapolis, where I was from, and try to get a job in journalism. Funny thing happened, though. It was, 95? I don't know what was going on in the market then, but I applied to the Wausau, Wisconsin paper, the Farmington, Minnesota paper, the International Falls, Minnesota paper. I was willing to go to the icebox of America, and I could not get a job in Minnesota. So
lucky you.
So in the meantime, in my education, I had spent some time in Latin America and learned Spanish, and so considering that was an asset that wasn't much needed at the time in Minnesota, I decided to apply to papers out here and ended up at the Arizona Daily Sun in Flagstaff in 1995. Then after a year and a half or so, in January 97, I came down here to Tucson, and expecting it to be maybe a six-month to a year gig, maybe 2 years before I'd head back to Minneapolis and live out my career there. But then, as often happens with people, life intervened.
And the desert hooked you, or a girl did?
Probably more the latter than the former. I got married to Patty Mackler, who was your former colleague at the Citizen back 12 years ago now.
Actually, at the Coolidge Examiner.
At the Coolidge Examiner, that's right. That's right. In the oasis of Pinal County.
So you've been covering the border most of the time that you've been there? Were you covering the federal court for a while?
Yeah, okay. So back in 97, from 97 to 2003, I was responsible both for covering the border alongside Nacho Ibarra, who worked out of Cochise County, and also I would monitor federal court and cover some cases there. But since most of the stuff there related to the border, it kind of was a natural connection.
So why did you want to make the jump to being an opinion writer?
I didn't.
Huh. Who talked you into it?
The publisher.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. So what are you finding as being an opinion writer? You know, we get beat into our heads. Well, you didn't go to J school, but you were a young journalist. You get beat into your head. You have to be objective no matter what people say that we go to the daily bias meeting. You know, that's not what we're trying to do in the news business. We're trying to provide objective news. And now you suddenly have to take off that objectivity hat and put on my personal point of view hat and write opinion. So how are you doing making that transition?
I'd say it took a few columns to really get comfortable with it, maybe six or seven. One of the reasons the publisher, John Humanek, asked me to do the job is that he and some others thought that my blogging had shown I have the voice. And as Bobby Joe Buell said, you know, I've been saying in my blog kind of A plus B plus C equals question mark, and kind of leading the reader to a conclusion without making it. And so now basically I say A plus B plus C equals D.
So that's an interesting distinction. So there's news reporting, the news that has your byline on it. And this is happening at most metro newspapers, where beat writers will have their beat and they write stories that cover their beat. And then they're doing these blogs, which is quasi-opinion. They're not necessarily expressing opinion, but they're more freer in their voice and able to write a blog. So how are you distinguishing between what you used to do as writing, you know, objective border news, and then your blog, and then now as a columnist?
Well, okay, so when I was writing the regular news stories, I mean, I tried to handle it the same way I handled any story through the years, treating people fairly, treating the issues fairly, but, you know, bringing up an issue if it needed to be brought up. The blog allowed me more freedom. One of the things I used it for most was to as a reporter's notebook, to empty out stuff that I found valuable but was not able to include. But there were times when I would point out what I considered misconduct or wrongdoing or something, and it was I'd say early when I was blogging, I did use more kind of maybe snarky tone of voice, and I tried to get away from that after a time because it struck me that there's enough snark in the world without me doing it too.
I would agree with that. So, what do you think the role of a metro columnist it should be? I mean, at most major newspapers, the metro columnist tends to be the face of the paper. Most readers might not remember the names of or be able to list the names of any of the beat writers, but they almost always can name the columnist. So, what do you think your role is supposed to be at the newspaper?
Well, I don't even think of it that deeply, unfortunately. I just kind of go from story to story, and I try to reflect what's going on in the community, both news-wise, but also I'm trying to find stories that are out of the news, just stories of people who are out there in Tucson. So, I mean, to an extent, it's just trying to be a mirror to the community, but with, you know, a personal perspective. I mean, I have a personal perspective, and my job is to provide it while also bringing some reporting to the table.
So it's a reported column. It's not just simply, this is what I think today.
Absolutely, yeah. I can't get out of the reporting habit, and I wouldn't want to.
So my father used to say that opinions are like the terminating end of the alimentary canal,
yeah.
that everybody has one. So why should the readers of the Arizona Daily Star listen to your opinion?
I think I bring a common sense approach. I try to not be overly judgmental and try to kind of think things out on the page with the reader so that they get there with me and they understand why this opinion or perspective is one that they should at least listen to, if not take for themselves.
One of the things that I had to get used to when I started writing opinion was getting used to the ego that's involved. It's one thing to sit around in a bar with your buddies and, you know, talk about that dang Obama, you know, boy, if I was in charge, this is the way things would be. But it's another thing to then take that and offer that out to tens of thousands of people in a community. So has that been something that you've had to learn how to adjust to?
I don't quite understand. You mean the ego?
The ego involved in saying, this is my opinion and this is why you should read it and why you should care what it is.
You know, it's not that far a jump from what I did before. I mean, there's a I would say for reporters in general, one of the attractions is to be able to kind of get yourself into these important events and cover them and reflect them through your own eyes. And that's what I do, but just taking it a little bit further, using the first person pronoun, I, and, you know, just I guess I try to put people in my position through the column where I'm interviewing people and what I'm seeing on, say, the golf course at El Rio.
So do you have a deliberative process that you use to try and figure out what news is?
Yeah, I just sit there and look over my story list and read the paper, and something might jump out at me. Or have an experience in day-to-day life. Those are sometimes it's a fine line you draw between things that happen to you that are interesting and reflect something bigger, and things that happen to you that are just things that happen to everybody and not worth putting in the paper. But for example, right now I'm today I plan to do one column for tomorrow related to El Rio Golf Course, which I wrote about for last Sunday's paper. But did some reading, did some talking to a couple of people, and then jumped ship, and this morning decided to switch over to a column about the Tucson Fire Department, which is undergoing a little more scrutiny again because one of their fire captains was demoted and then reinstated for roughhousing at a fire station. So it's just quick to change if the need be.
Okay, well, so this is probably a good time to take our first break. We'll be back in a few minutes with a word from these fine Buckmaster Show sponsors.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Road. Everybody who's anybody is here. Aren't you?
John Fina.
You're?
Jim Levinsky.
I know that face.
Bruce Beach.
Hey there.
Billy Flower.
Great to see you.
Burt Williams.
I thought I just saw you.
Bob Schaff.
Thanks for coming.
Casey Polipchak.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see
Chris
you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
Diana Cannon.
I didn't know you were coming.
Bill Hussey.
You're?
Joseph Blair.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Viner.
You know that face.
Mike Fader.
Aren't you?
Jeff Ronstadt.
Hey, this is Ken Flower. You can join the party too. Go to ArizonaPartyRental.net.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Southern Arizona is home to one of the world's most trusted sources of information on medicines. The Credible Meds website is visited each day by over 2,000 people from more than 60 countries. You too can learn how to personalize your medications and take control of your health care. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and join Bill Buckmaster each month as he and Dr. Ray Woosley, founder of Credible Meds, give you practical tips on how to get the most from your medications.
Why should you fly out of TIA? Easy. Do the math. First, airfares are extremely competitive, so you won't spend more on your tickets. Second, you'll save at least 4 hours of your precious time, not to mention a bunch of money on gas. Third, covered parking right by the terminal is only $9 a day. And fourth, TIA offers daily nonstop service to many of your favorite destinations. So, what does it all add up to? Easy. Fly TIA. It's the way to go.
Are you a landlord by choice or by force? Experiencing a job transfer and don't know what to do with your current house? Want to move but can't sell your current house? Hello, my name is Ken Adams, co-owner of Rincon Ventures Property Management. Rincon Ventures has a fully automated accounting process, electronic payments, and 24-hour access to your accounts. With some of the lowest rates in Tucson, Rincon Ventures has grown rapidly in this down economy. Let us show you why. Give us a call at 881-2258 right now and experience the difference. Rincon Ventures, where service is a fact, not another empty promise. 881-2258.
If you love antiques like I do, I strongly suggest a visit to Adobe House Antiques, specializing in early 20th century European and American Western art. They also have a fantastic selection of antique light fixtures. Adobe House Antiques in the Jostler Design Building at 2700 North Campbell. Adobe House Antiques, 325-9439. That's 325-9439.
For more than 40 years, Pima Community College has helped our neighbors realize their dreams, prepare for meaningful employment, improve their quality of life, and build a better community. We haven't done it alone. Your continuing investment in education has made it possible for us to prepare hundreds of thousands of Southern Arizonans for jobs. Today's PCC students will be tomorrow's firefighters, nurses, police officers, teachers, and small business owners, the backbone of a smart, thriving Tucson and Pima County. Our region has not been immune to the unprecedented economic challenges of the past few years. During this time, PCC has prided itself on offering crucial programs and services at an extremely affordable price. We remain one of Arizona's best education bargains. With your ongoing support, we look forward to embarking on new directions and building new community connections that ensure the people of Pima County will prosper today and in the future. For more information, contact us at 206-4500 or visit us at pima.edu. Pima Community College, developing our community through learning.
We're back. I'm Mark B. Evans, sitting in for Bill Buckmaster while he's on vacation. My guest on the Buckmaster Show today is Tim Steller, Metro columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. So when we left off, Tim, we were talking about your process for how you determine what you're going to write for that day. Or for the, you write, what, three columns a week?
Yeah, Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday, the columns appear.
So is there anybody you bounce ideas off of, or is there ways you figure out, well, this is my opinion, is this the opinion that I should have, or?
Yeah, I talk with my editor about him pretty much every column, and other people as well, colleagues. For example, I mentioned that column I wrote for last Sunday about El Rio Golf Course. I changed opinions on that two or three times before I – or no, that wasn't that one. It was the one I wrote about the Union Pacific Rail Yard at Picacho Peak area. I changed my opinions two or three times back and forth before I finally came to what I wanted to say. Fortunately, there was a deadline coming, so I had to settle on something.
So what were you bouncing back and forth? What were we trying to decide?
It was between whether – you know, the greater question is between whether you support the idea of the rail yard or oppose it. And then within those confines, there are other questions about, you know, whether you like the way the state was handling the land sale, which is more or less by dragging it out and pressing a hard bargain. And that's what I finally decided I liked. I said I like the idea of the rail yard there. I think it makes sense overall, but the state needs to press a hard bargain for themselves and on behalf of the neighbors there and all the interests involved.
So that's one of about 50 or 60 that you've written in the last 4 or 5 months.
I suppose.
So is there a favorite you've written so far, one that you thought, wow, I really nailed that one?
I don't know about that I got it just right, but the one that has stirred people up a lot lately is the one I wrote about University High and Basis Tucson. I think I got that more or less right, but what's really rewarding is the conversation that it gets going, the back and forth, and it's real debate about the role of different kinds of schools in education and the financial aspects of education in Arizona that emerged from that column.
So fill us in a little bit. What was the issue, and what was the process you were going through in your head deciding what it was that you needed to write about it?
Well, I had written previously about Basis and
which is a stellar charter school that's always named in the top of the nation as the best schools in the country,
right? And it's
for high schools.
It's local, and so naturally we celebrate that. But I had been told by people that the issue with Basis was that they cream the student crop, so to speak, which is meaning they take the best students from across the Tucson area. So I did a story about that 4 or 5 years ago, and whether the question of whether that was true. I had been doing more on education recently, and so then Basis got another high ranking about 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago. And so after they got that ranking, I decided to look into what it means that Basis and usually University High get these high national rankings in the U.S. News and World Report annual ranking.
Right.
And so what I came to was that, what I tried to point out is that it reflects a couple of things. One is the kind of students that they bring in, which are in general high-performing students, although the Basis people would dispute that to some degree with me. And also it's a function of their use of the advanced placement curriculum, which is one of the main criteria for getting ranked. That is, what percentage of your students take AP tests and pass the tests. That's the final; those two are the final criteria in U.S. News and World Report's rankings. And so my argument was that, you know, while we should celebrate that we have two of these high-ranked schools here, we shouldn't read too much into it because it's a function of both some selection of student body and of the curriculum that they use. And people, especially on the basis side, weren't too happy with that column.
Well, and when reading the story comments, I actually have the courage to wade into the Arizona Daily Star story comments. I think it's fascinating reading some of those comments.
You're a stronger man than I.
And so there were a lot of people that were congratulatory. They really liked what you'd written, and they agreed with you. And then there was also some criticism. So, you know, praise is easy to take, you know, criticism not so much. But one of the things I've learned in opinion writing is to not to dismiss criticism and to try and listen to it and say, well, did I miss something? Did I get this a little bit wrong, or was this something I didn't know about? So how do you take criticism? Do you pay attention to it?
Yeah, I try to. I mean, it's, you know, something that everybody has to deal with, but it's, I guess, a bigger part of my job and your job. And yeah, I try to be open to it. I really try. There are times when people push my buttons and I react or don't take it well. But I try to have an open debate. The thing that I don't like is, you know, name calling and categorization of you as something you're not.
So name calling is de rigueur in the Arizona Daily Star comments. They'd love to. I think some of your best, most faithful readers are all the people who say they don't like the Arizona Daily Star. but they always love to cast the star as liberal, right? Everybody's over there is just a bunch of liberals. So you're writing an opinion column. You haven't done an introductory column to say this is my point of view. So do you think readers need to know what your point of view is? And what is your point of view?
Well, I think they get my point of view. I mean,
Which is what? Would you describe yourself as liberal, centrist, conservative,
I think
pragmatic?
I'm going to choose the easy way out, which is to say pragmatic, because that is truly my nature. I think you can see where I come from in my columns. I think maybe one thing that makes me a decent choice for Tucson is that I think I am pretty aligned with what most of maybe the median point of view is in Tucson. But I try to be very pragmatic. Like, for example, in looking at the responses to the Connecticut shootings, there were a lot of somewhat crazy-sounding proposals in the legislature for school security, and I tried to break them down and look at them, and I ended up just saying, you know what, they're not as crazy as they sound. I think we should try all of them. There might be a couple exceptions there that I didn't like, but that included this crazy-sounding idea of having trained administrators or teachers with an access to a locked weapon in the building. It didn't strike me as so wild that could be a security measure as a last resort in a disaster or an attack. You know, it would give one opportunity for a school employee to react. So I said, go for it. I like that idea.
So one of the things that I think was a fault in my opinion writing is that I'm too quick to be critical. In fact, because criticism's easy. It's really easy to be critical of people. It's harder to find the things in government or in just the general operation of the city and the community that, hey, well, this is great, and you should know about this, or something that's kind of under the radar where someone's, you know, doing something heroic. Do you find that as a struggle, that where you're trying to find the balance of praise versus criticism?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a column topic, I have rarely had written about a heroic or at least focused on a praiseworthy person. And yeah, that's a fault for sure. It's a fault not just of mine, but I think probably most people in our industry who write this kind of column. But I would say that's in choosing the topics. But I'd say within the topics, I try to give credit where due. Like last Sunday's column on El Rio, I tried to counter some of the criticism against Regina Romero, the city council member, and say I thought her idea was okay, but it probably won't work out, and that it was worth taking this imaginative kind of approach, that is the idea of selling or leasing El Rio Golf Course to Grand Canyon University for a new campus.
So I think that'll do it. Tim, thanks for being here. I'm talking about your job today. I think it's one of the most important jobs over there at the Star, so I wish you a long, successful career.
Thank you.
Thanks. The Buckmaster Show is brought to you by the Silver City Grant County, New Mexico, which is hosting the 18th annual Silver City Blues Festival Memorial Day weekend, May 24th, 25th, and 26th in Silver City, New Mexico, just 3.5 hours east of Tucson. There are plenty of great places to stay, including Bear Mountain Lodge and Faywood Hot Springs Resort. For more information, check out www.southwesternnewmexico.org. We'll be back after the break. This is the Bill Buckmaster Show, KVOI 1030 AM.
With SRN News, I'm Wally Hines in Washington. President Obama's defending his use of drone strikes in his war on terror, including against American citizens involved in terror activity overseas. Speaking at the National Defense University in Washington today, Mr. Obama says when an American goes abroad to wage war against the U.S., his citizenship should no more serve as a shield than a sniper shooting on an innocent crowd should be protected from the SWAT team. Two more suspects have been arrested by British police in connection with yesterday's killing of a British soldier in London. Both are being held on suspicion of conspiracy to murder. Police already had in custody two men who were shot and wounded by officers responding to the hacking death of the off-duty soldier. Authorities have clarified and significantly downgraded the number of homes damaged or destroyed in this week's tornado in Oklahoma City. They now say 1,200, not 12,000. No reason for the downgrade. This is SRN News.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com.
Want the best care for your companion animal? Then Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson is the place for specialty vets for your special pet. With a state-of-the-art, award-winning facility, only the Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson delivers compassionate, comprehensive veterinary emergency and specialty care 24/7 in a wide range of fields. Veterinary Specialty Center of Tucson at North La Cunada Drive at West River or online at vscott.com. That's VSCOT.com.
Finding the perfect Tucson rental home is now easy thanks to Tucson Rental Homes, which offer high-quality 1, 2, and 3-bedroom luxury rental homes with private gated yards in a classic Santa Fe-style architecture. Designed, built, and managed by Tucson Rental Homes, prices start at just $750 a month. Check out our many homes now available at TucsonRentalHomes.com.
Westin La Paloma, Tucson's iconic luxury resort and spa, is now better than ever with a $30 million resort rejuvenation that includes all guest rooms, public spaces, meeting rooms, upgraded golf and tennis, and soon a new pool area and enhanced fine dining. And the setting, well, it couldn't be better on 250 acres in the foothills of the Catalinas. Take a look at the rejuvenation at westinlapalomaresort.com.
Looking for a cool getaway this July? I highly recommend historic Bear Mountain Lodge, just minutes from the picturesque heart of Silver City, New Mexico, only 3.5 hours east of Tucson. Bear Mountain Lodge sits on 178 secluded acres nestled against the immense grandeur of the Gila National Forest. Check out this lovely high country tranquil oasis at bearmountainlodge.com.
Vero Amore restaurants are known as the place for authentic wood-fired Neapolitan pizzas, plus delicious pastas, panini, salads, and more. Every flavorful dish is homemade using the finest and freshest local and imported ingredients available. Vero Amore has two locations open daily, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show on KVOI 1030 AM. I'm still Mark B. Evans, and I'm still sitting in for the vacationing Bill Buckmaster. My guests for this part of the show are Dan Shearer, editor of the Green Valley News and Sun, and Dan Gibson, editor of the Tucson Weekly. Gentlemen, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thanks.
I feel bad only having one paper. I should get myself something else.
I've actually got two and a half.
Oh. Well,
Santa Cruz Valley Sun.
So so I will call you Weekly Dan and Green Valley Dan so
thank
we
you.
Can figure out who I'm talking to here. So let's just introduce if listeners to the show aren't familiar with either of your publications, which I would be surprised if they weren't, but just for the sake of I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
Weekly Dan, why don't you tell us what the mission is of Tucson Weekly and who you think your audience is?
It's a fascinating question. I mean, the basis of the Tucson Weekly is an alternative news weekly. If people aren't familiar with the format, it sort of rose up in the 70s to sort of provide simply an alternative to standard daily newspapers and stuff. We come out every week. It's a slightly sort of left of center position. Some people would argue further left than that. But we cover arts, we cover news, we cover music, food, what to do in Tucson, and what's happening, I guess.
And Dan, same question about the Green Valley papers.
Well, the Green Valley News is a twice weekly. It serves the community of Green Valley and goes down to Amato and Tubac. We have some circulation down there. It's a traditional mainstream newspaper. The Sawarita Sun is a weekly, and it's the same. It just hits a very, very different market from Green Valley.
So one of the goals that I had today in having you guys here and then Tim Steller also is one of the things that I notice in the way people perceive the news is that they often don't understand how the news is gathered and how it's reported. And so I thought it might be interesting to have you guys here and talk about that a little bit. So Green Valley, Dan, there are four TV news stations in town, plus there's the PBS, Arizona Public Media, which does radio updates on NPR. And there's the Arizona Daily Star, which has a very large website and a daily newspaper. So since you're a non-daily newspaper, but you also have a website, how do you decide what the news is so that it's not the same thing people may have already heard on broadcast media or have already read in the Star?
Well, you've pretty much hit on the reason that local community newspapers, which is what the Green Valley News is, why they are surviving and actually in many cases thriving, and that is we go after very, very local news, and this is stuff that you pretty much can't get anywhere else. The Star has largely, other than regional issues, has largely abandoned Green Valley and Sarita because of their staffing issues, which all newspapers are having, but the Green Valley News focuses on stuff that people literally cannot get anywhere else. If we have a bee attack or a big car crash, you're going to get the TV people down there. But for anything day to day, they're not going to get it anywhere else. We have a radio station that rips off from us, of course, because that's what they do. But for the most part, we aren't going to care about state, national, international stuff because there are so many different sources for that.
So whereas Dan Shearer's paper, the Green Valley paper, is a suburban paper covering a suburban community, your paper is more metropolitan, Dan Gibson. So how do you make those decisions about having content that's different than what's already been in daily media?
I think to some extent I'm happy to be free of the burden of being a paper of record. So, I mean, we try to just cover the most interesting news. So, I mean, we're not compelled to write about every last thing that happens. We don't have to talk about every court case, things like that. So we try to pick the things that people are talking about or the things that people should be talking about. So it's sort of a mix of that. I mean, you know, so that's why we have these currents pieces. We have the skinny. We're covering what's happening in politics, the personalities, the things that are happening. You know, we try to drill down to what's happening in Tucson for the type of people who read our paper and the type of people who should be reading our paper.
So the Alt Weekly reputation that was started with the Village Voice and the Phoenix New Times was gobs and gobs of insider cultural reporting, music, the local music scene, dining, nightlife, and the like. And that was kind of its bread and butter. And then really hard-edged political reporting. Does that still exist? Is there still an alternative weekly? Are you guys, do you think you have that same hard edge that maybe it had back in the day?
I mean, I think part of that was just born out of, you know, radicalism a little bit.
Right.
You know, so I mean, there's less of that. I mean, we're a little more mainstream in our purpose than the original Village Voice, and God only knows what the actual Village Voice right now, what they're doing with it. But, you know, it is
putting it out of business.
I think that's the plan. But it's the idea of, like, what is happening in this town? What are the things people are talking about? And, you know, sometimes that is, like, reporting that has not a spin to it, but has a personality. You know, I mean, we're a little more personality-driven in the way we write about things than, obviously, a daily paper has the freedom or want to do. So, you know, when you read Jim Nintzel, you get the sense of the person that Jim Nintzel is and the perspective he has on things. So, I mean, that's a little bit of the difference than what, you know, even, like, what – even Tim Stellar, for a decent example. You know, like, there isn't – he writes – even at the end of it is not a ton of heavy personality stuff.
Right, right. So Green Valley, Dan, you've got an interesting news organization in that you've kind of got a split personality news audience. I-19 kind of divides your audience. On one side, you've got retirees who are generally mostly affluent, although I think there's a kind of a mix of incomes there.
Right.
And then on the other side, you've got Cerrito, where you've got young families, you know, they've got school issues there and things like that. So how do you figure out that balance of which half of my readership wants to read which story?
Right. That's a really good question, because the median age of Sahuarita residents is about half of that of Green Valley. Green Valley, very heavy print readers, although they are also adept on the computer. But Sarita, the issue really for a long time was getting people to connect with their community, to put roots down in their community, because I think a lot of them felt like they were just going to be there 2 or 3 years, and they were going to be transferred or move on, or something was going to happen. So they seemed reluctant. But just in the last year or two, I felt like people are really trying to put their arms around Sarita. It's a wonderful place to live, and they are starting to care more and more about the issues. Now, the regional issues, of course, are of great import to both audiences, and we're talking mining and water and immigration growth, things like that. And so both will cover that. There are really not too many issues that are really exclusive to one market or the other. So it's we're trying to bring them together more, and I think we're having some success.
Well, Sarita is a incorporated town, and it has a town government, but Green Valley is still unincorporated, I believe, most of it. And so there's really no government to cover there. So how do you figure out what those people want to know about what's going on Continental Avenue?
Well, people say Green Valley has no mayor, and I say no. They have about a half dozen, because there are some
HOAs.
People. Yeah, we have actually about 100 HOAs, but we have the Green Valley Council, which is very, very influential, even though technically it has absolutely no authority. But it covers much of the town, and it is our first line of, communication with the county, which is our first level of government. They're very strong, very influential. Green Valley Recreation, which has 13 rec centers in that area and really dictates how people recreate and live their lives, and has a lot of insight into how people what people want, what's trending there. And so Green Valley Recreation covers about 80% of the community too. So getting into Green Valley and digging in and figuring out what's important to them is actually quite easy. Sarita is a little bit of a different animal, though, because the people, again, are not quite as connected.
And Dan, you're covering a metropolitan – Dan Gibson. You're covering a metropolitan area with a very small staff, and there's probably – I don't know how many. There's probably 20, 25 governments within the metropolitan area. But, of course, there's the two big 300-pound gorillas. There's the county and the city of Tucson. So how do you have beats over there? How do your reporters figure out that this is a news story that's not being reported elsewhere that we need to report on?
I mean, I think we're lucky in the sense that we have reporters that have been in the community for a long time and have those extensive connections that they're just hearing a lot of stuff. It is somewhat beat-based, I mean, but we aren't covering every council meeting, every, you know, Board of Supervisors meeting.
Right, because you're not, like you said, you're not a paper of record.
Right, and we just, I don't think that we could. You know, it would pull away from doing some of the reporting that we need to do otherwise. So, I mean, it's mostly just having those deep connections is a big part of it is, you know, I'm thankful to have the people that we have, and we try to keep our ears out there. It's especially in the social media areas, just using, you know, Facebook timelines and Twitter as sources for that stuff. It's just staying on top of it.
And I think I'm describing you guys anachronistically because we're still in this newspaper, the paper comes out in the morning state of mind. But with the digital transition and the digital age, there's really no such thing as today's news. It's this minute's news. How important is your website, do you think, in your news presentation?
It's, you know, for us, and we've really ramped it up the last couple of years, and I've been here 4.5 years, but we've really ramped it up. It's very important, particularly for breaking news. It is the way that Sarita pretty much likes to get its news, even though we have a good circulation up there also. But to hit on what Dan was saying earlier, it's very important that we spend time in our community. I live there. I like the reporters to live there if possible. We have to get out and talk to people. What affects your audience? Know what the issues are that they care about and what is affecting them. And you can only do that through getting out and talking to groups and being involved. And it's a very different animal. I came from the Arizona Republic. I worked at a monster of a paper for more than 20 years. And then you come down here and it's a very, very different approach. You have to really know your audience. And I, every single day, have got two or three unannounced visitors who come in, knock on the door and say, hey, I want to talk to the editor. And you know what? I don't turn down any of them because these are the people who I want to know what they're thinking. And at the Republic, I think the building was frankly too intimidating for people.
They couldn't here, get past the security guards.
Absolutely. And here, they think they own the paper. And right. You know what? They do.
We got to take a break, but when we come back, Dan, I want to ask you the same question about the website. We're going to take a break right now. You're listening to The Buckmaster Show, KVOI, 10:30 a.m.
Hey, we're at this incredible event put on by who else but Arizona Party Row. Everybody who's anybody is here, aren't you?
John Fina.
You're
Jim Levinsky.
I know that face.
Bruce Beach.
Hey there.
Billy Flower.
Great to see you.
Burt Williams.
I thought I just saw you.
Bob Schaff.
Thanks for coming.
Casey Polipchak.
You look familiar.
Dave Fitzsimmons.
Gosh, it's great to see
Chris
you.
Chris Edwards.
Hey, come on in.
Diana Cannon.
I didn't know you were coming.
Bill Hussey.
You're
Joseph Blair.
Hey, how you doing?
Bill Viner.
You know that face.
Mike Fader.
Aren't you?
Jeff Ronstadt.
Hey, this is Ken Flower. You can join the party too. Go to ArizonaPartyRental.net.
There are a million people in metropolitan Tucson, and they have a million stories to tell. That's why there is TucsonCitizen.com, the voice of Tucson. Nearly 100 citizen journalists and bloggers, including the Buckmaster Show, report the news and provide perspective, opinion, and information about everything from local politics to the Arizona Wildcats. Visit TucsonCitizen.com today to read what you can't find in traditional media or to contact us to add your voice to the voice of Tucson, TucsonCitizen.com.
Hi, this is Al Zaragoza, the voice of Culligan Water in Southern Arizona. Even the highest efficiency washing machine won't make your laundry soft and bright if you have hard water. It's the same for your dishwasher with spotted glasses. So why not call the Culligan man? Culligan now has a high-efficiency water softener that virtually eliminates hard water problems throughout your entire home. Your laundry is brighter and softer, glasses and shower doors are spot-free, and soaps and detergents last longer. Plus, it saves you up to 46% in water, salt, and energy. So if you're looking for ways to end hard water problems and save money around the house, a Culligan high-efficiency water softener works wonders. In fact, it makes all of your high-efficiency appliances work better and last longer. Thanks to Culligan, 100% satisfaction guarantee, your future, your home, and your laundry are guaranteed to be brighter. Call Culligan Water at 792-9700. 792-9700. Culligan. Better water, pure and simple.
The nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Organization, Tucson Wildlife Center, is in the midst of a capital campaign to build Arizona's first state-of-the-art hospital for wildlife. The facility will help staff and volunteers care for nearly 1,000 raptors and mammals it receives each year at its Far East Side facility. To donate online, go to TucsonWildlife.com. For more information about wildlife rescue, visit the website or call 290-WILD.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soup, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley.
Come in, sit down. You must be Megan and Mark. I'm Sharon, your wedding planner.
Hello.
Hi.
So, are you planning a large wedding?
150 guests.
Okay, then. Fairly large. Let me just get online and we can look at some venues.
Wow. Is that dial-up?
You bet. Oh, they keep trying to sell me fast internet, but come on, faster internet. I need that like I need a color monitor. Oh, now, I assume you'll be videotaping your ceremony. Oh, just ignore that. The machine will pick it up.
Your technology says a lot about your business. Cox Business Internet Professional offers speeds 10 times faster than basic DSL. Cox Business also gives you local support 24/7, free online backup and security. Bundle business internet starter and phone for only $95 per month. Switch to Cox Business today and make your business our business. Visit coxbusiness.com. Offer valid until July 1st, 2013. Prices exclude taxes and other fees and may be subject to minimum service requirements. Speed comparison based on maximum download speed of Cox Business Internet Professional 15 megabits per second versus basic DSL 1.5 megabits per second. Other restrictions apply.
Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show. My guests are Dan Shearer from the Green Valley News and Sun and Dan Gibson of the Tucson Weekly. When we left off, I was asking about how important your websites are to your news presentation and having up-to-the-minute news and getting away from that anachronistic thinking of this week's news if you're a News Weekly. How important is your website to you, Dan?
I think it, to me it's just as important as the paper. I mean, obviously I'm a little bit biased because that's the side I came from, was digital media. So I'm probably more inclined to think that than most people because I just have – I love print publications, but I just – that's where my training came from. So, I mean, to us it's an opportunity to be out in front of things, to create conversation, to talk about stuff. I think – you know, I think we did a better job than most outlets on the most recent election. I think we'll do a better job than most – the Star and some other places – on the city council election coming up, because we just put a lot of effort into it. We want to get people on the ground. We're accustomed to reporting that way. And, you know, our website is a place where we're putting up 8 to 10 things a day. We're working on weekends, where if something comes up at 10:30 at night, it goes up. So, I mean, it's such a big part to us. And there are as many people come to our website every week that pick up our paper. So we have to treat it seriously.
Right.
Different revenue sources is confusing in that sense, but
so one of the most commonly heard complaints about the news media, people like to paint with a broad brush, is that it's the liberal mainstream media. You shouldn't trust what you read in the newspapers because it's all liberal, it's all biased. The Weekly is interesting though because it's you don't run away from that. You're not right. Trying to convince people that you're objective. You tell people, hey, we got a point of view. But do you ever worry that point of view might get in the way of whether people will trust what's written? And I'll give you an example. During the last election, Jim Nintzel wrote a very good piece about supervisor candidate Allie Miller's tenuous grasp on county finances. And it was easily dismissed as, oh, well, that was just something I think she yelled out at a meeting. The Weekly is a liberal rag. So does that ever come into your decision-making about your editing or your news selection? Do you worry, well, no one's going to buy this because they just see us as liberal? It doesn't matter.
I try to be conscious of that. I mean, it's less – not so much my desire to be, you know, the Tucson Record of liberal guilt. You know, I mean, that's not the paper I want to run. But, you know – the funny thing is with Nintzel, while Allie Miller and some of these other people will just dismiss this outright, he gets – Frank Antonori is the first person – calls for Nintzel first on things. You know, we have really good relationships with a lot of the Republican players in this town. And so it's an attempt to be – I think we can be – have perspective. I think we can admit that we don't come at everything from a clean slate, but also – be fair. I think there's a space to do that. And people that we've covered who are in this town, you know, center right or a little bit further, generally think that we treat them fairly. We make the call. We get both sides of the story. We're just not in, we don't have to do the sort of count space. You know, I had a conversation with somebody at the Star and they're like, oh, during election season, we have to make sure that each candidate, we have to mark out how many inches they get. Well, some of those some of those candidates don't deserve the space. They're
Joe
not
Sweeney.
Joe Sweeney could have had as much. We'll give him an in memoriam space because he was spectacular. But some of those candidates don't deserve the coverage. They're not worth. They don't have anything to say. They're not contributing to the conversation. So just their existence doesn't mean that they should have a space, I think.
Right. So Dan, Shira, you're the opposite down in Green Valley. You're trying to be an objective news source. However, you're reporting news in a very conservative area. Does that affect your news judgment at all, do you think?
Well, you know, one day I got a call from someone who said, you know, your paper's way too conservative and I know you're leading the charge. And then, and I tell you not 5 minutes later, I got somebody who said, you're way too liberal and I know you're leading the charge. And and the fact is, that is pretty representative of the types of calls I get. So the fact is, people do see us both ways, and people will always, when they don't like what's in your paper, make those kinds of accusations. So do we have biases? Well, of course we do, that they should not show up in the news pages, and I think we do a good job of making sure that they don't. But the accusations will always be there. In the end, I am very committed and went to the U of A journalism school, and they drove it into your head, you know, to be objective and to be fair with people. But Dan brings up a good point. Fair doesn't necessarily mean equal space, and he's absolutely right. It's a difficult thing for people to understand, but in the end, everybody has access because I believe the paper is really owned by everybody.
One of the things that I try to teach my journalism students is to stop saying fair, because fairness, I believe, is the eye of the
Absolutely.
Beholder.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And instead, what I try to set as a standard is your story complete and accurate,
right.
And does it achieve substantial understanding? Does the reader know what they needed to know when they're done reading it? My experience is that whatever lens they're reading the story through, whatever political lens is that is the way they'll perceive that story. So if that story affirms their particular political point of view, then that is a fair and balanced story. But
right.
if it doesn't, well, then that's total bias.
Well, and the difficult thing now is that we do have some cable TV channels, we have blogs, we have newspapers out there that have said flat out, we're going to take we're going to lean left or lean right. And unfortunately, journalism students coming up now think that that's okay to do. It is not okay to do. If you're going to be trusted with this very important job of getting news to people, then you do have to be balanced, and you have to let all sides have that voice. And I'm afraid that we're losing some of that. And people now come, and I had somebody ask me the other day, so are you guys a liberal paper or are you a conservative paper? And that's it's almost an affront, to be honest with you. We work
to decide whether to take it or not.
Yeah, exactly. But we work very, very hard at it, and I think people do recognize that in the end.
So we were talking during the break about comments on stories, and I view this as one of the one of the best things and one of the greatest curses of the internet age is these instantaneous reader feedback on news stories. In the past, if you didn't like a story, you liked a story, you had to write a letter to the editor. The editor read it. He may put it in the paper. He may not put it in the paper. He may put some of it, may put all of it. But he also verified who wrote it and your name went on it. Mm-hmm. Now you've got all these anonymous comments, and it's for some newspaper commenting systems, because they just can't afford the staff to moderate all those comments, it becomes just a free-for-all and a home for want of a better word, and I hope this doesn't give them FCC trouble, jackasses. the producer's looking for the dump button.
It's a radio silence.
What do you guys think about story comments on your stories? I think both of you allow them. Do you moderate them at all? Do you go through and look for the bad people and kick them out?
I think I've tried to approach it from the sense that I believe that the comments are for the reader and not necessarily for the person just to have an opportunity to speak. And I think that's the sort of different. There's a really different perspective there, and it's whether that's what it is. Some people, they have the comments just because they want traffic. They just want people to get on there and page views.
Right.
That's the entire purpose of them. I think they should really be an accent to the story online, an opportunity for people to provide information, to say, hey, listen, you're wrong about this and here's why. But if we go in there and we have pretty distinct comment section rules. So when the personal attacks come in, they're gone. Those comments are gone. They don't add anything to the conversation. They don't need to be there. So, I mean, it's just a perspective thing. I could live without – I love page views. I'm just as beholden to them as anybody else. But I don't want to get them by turning off people by saying, well, I don't go into the comment section because it's terrible or because it's a cesspool. If our comment section becomes a cesspool, then I think it reflects on our brand.
Right. Right.
Right. We actually do moderate every single comment. I look at every one before it goes up, and I just was looking at the numbers the other day, and about 20% of them do not get up there because of the same rules. We have the same rules for those as we do for writing a letter to the editor. It has to be – you have to be – treat people decently, and it has to be accurate information. So if it isn't, then it's not going up there.
So I think that will do it. I'd like to thank my guests, Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star, and Dan Shearer of the Green Valley News and Sun, and Dan Gibson of the Tucson Weekly for being here. Gentlemen, I appreciate it greatly.
Thank you. Oh,
of course.
I now take time to tell the great listeners of the Buckmaster Show that bottled water in the Buckmaster Show is provided by Culligan, offering the best drinking water and the largest variety of water treatment products and services available to your home or business. That'll do it for today's Buckmaster Show. Thanks for listening, Tucson. Bill will be back Tuesday. And remember, Tucson, the dude abides, and so should you.
Intelligent Talk 24/7, AM 1030, KVOI, Cortero, Tucson. On the web at KVOI.com.